On Tech News Today, Microsoft plans to give away free upgrades to Windows 10, even to software pirates. Plus, will the government kill Comcast's acquisition of Time Warner Cable? And we'll tell you why Google's delivery drone crashed and burned. It's all coming up next on Tech News Today.
This is Twit.
Bandwidth for Tech News Today is provided by CashFly at CacheFly.com.
It's time for Twit's annual audience survey, and we want to hear from you. Please visit twit.tv/survey and let us know what you think. It only takes a few minutes, and your anonymous feedback will help us make Twit even better. We thank you so much for your continued support. twit.tv/survey.
This is Tech News Today for Wednesday, March 18th, 2015. This episode is brought to you by Blue Apron. Blue Apron will send you all the ingredients to cook fresh, delicious meals with simple step-by-step instructions right to your door. See what's on the menu this week and get your first two meals free by going to blueapron.com/twit. That's blueapron.com/twit. And by Gazelle, the fast and simple way to sell your used gadgets. Find out what your used iPhone, iPad, and other Apple products are worth at gazelle.com. Tech News Today is the show where we talk about the tech news with the journalists who report it. My name is Mike Elgin. Welcome to the show. Our co-anchor today is Jason Heiner, global editor-in-chief of Tech Republic and global long-form editor of ZDNet, all for CBS Interactive. Welcome to you, Jason.
Hey, always a pleasure to be here, my friend.
Always great to have you on the show. You know, the only complaint I have, and I mentioned this before when you've been on the show before, is I agree with everything you say, and it really irritates me. But you always make a lot of great points. Hopefully today we can disagree on something.
All right.
I'll try to fabricate some sort of controversy if necessary.
It's a good goal.
Yeah, exactly. Well, before we get started, I want to ask everybody out there in Twitland, if you've got a few moments and want to help us improve Twit shows, just go to twit.tv/survey. We've got our annual survey going on. You can fill out that survey. It takes about 3, 4, 5 minutes, something like that. And it will help us improve what we do here at Twit and helps us build a better broadcasting network for you. So we really appreciate it if you would do that. All right, Jason, why don't we jump into the news? Microsoft announced yesterday that Windows 10 will be a free upgrade for current Windows users, even those running pirated versions of Windows. Ars Technica UK senior editor Sebastian Anthony is here to explain what the heck is going on. Welcome to you, Sebastian.
Hi. Nice to be on the show again.
Thanks for coming on. Now, why are they rewarding pirates with a free upgrade?
Let's frame this as in... This was announced by Terry Myerson in an interview with Reuters. Like, it's you would expect this kind of thing to be on stage at a Build conference or something like that. It's a weird story. We thought it was framed around China because China has a rampant piracy problem. But then eventually Microsoft PR told us that it's going to be everyone gets a free upgrade to Windows 10. We're all still kind of reeling from that. We're not quite sure what to make of it. I'm pretty sure it revolves around Windows as a service. Basically, every other operating system is free now, and Microsoft needs to make money somewhere else. So it's going to be Skype subscriptions, app sales. It's going to be bundled Office 365 with other services and that kind of thing. And as part of that, Microsoft really needs everyone to be on Windows 10, even pirates, basically. And I mean, the other way of looking at it is that pirates never really made Microsoft much money anyway. This way, they may actually get something out of them. But even if not, then at least these computers will be safe, secure, updated. You know, it's a bold move from Microsoft. But I would say it's a kind of everyone wins, I think.
Yeah, I mean, Sebastian, you know, Microsoft, you know, notoriously in some ways took... They extracted so much of the value in the past out of the PC ecosystem, right? The PC makers have been left to really fight each other tooth and nail for profits, and there's very razor thin profits in the actual PC business. And Microsoft was making all of the money off of the software licenses. They are with this move. They are drifting away from that a bit. You wrote about that, you know, in your piece, where they're moving to this model where more of the income comes from outside of licensing. You know, let's talk a little bit about that and how they plan to do that, and sort of why some of that is a smart model, some of it's, you know, adjusting to the times that they live in and that kind of thing. You know, tell us a little bit more about your perspective on that.
I think, as you say, so the margins in the PC business are abysmal. They're down at like 2 or 3% for people like Dell, HP. And all that margin is purely from the shovelware that they put on PCs. You know, that's why you get all this awful software on your, you know, store-bought PC. And now, yeah, I guess you could say this puts more power in the hands of OEMs to make some money. I think it will be very interesting to see how the industry reacts to this. But on the other hand, Microsoft is still going to make a lot of money from enterprise, from business. You know, there's no sign that Windows is going to be free, I think, in the enterprise. I still think it's going to be software assurance subscriptions over there.
Yeah.
I don't know. I think we may need to see how this one plays out. I think this is very much about, you know, Windows 8 was not very good. The ecosystem, the third-party developers were no doubt pretty upset by Windows 8. I see Windows 10 as maybe an attempt to bring everyone back under the same kind of roof, and hopefully inspire some interesting development, get everyone kind of loving Windows again. But yeah, I think it's going to be tough. It's going to be interesting. I mean, any way you look at it, the desktop industry is not the most exciting industry right now. It's all about smartphones still. Yeah. Microsoft is obviously hoping that if everyone is using Windows 10, then that may finally kickstart Windows on the phone. But again, we've been writing that kind of thing for a while, you know, like this will finally kickstart Windows Phone. Will Windows 10 finally get Windows Phone up and running? I hope so. I really want a third runner in the smartphone business. And Windows 10 is the obvious third person. But whether that actually happens, I honestly don't know. I hope so.
How about, so you talked about enterprises. Enterprises, they're still going to pay for support. Like you said, software assurance, which is a license that lets them have Microsoft software across all of their stack of machines and get support for it when they have difficulties. But for consumers and for, you know, places like China, where there are, you know, literally millions and millions, hundreds of millions of pirated copies of Windows, this goes down to, you know, to a kind of a consumer play where they are essentially giving Windows away for free and making a platform play in that sense, right? Can they win as a platform? That is essentially acting in many ways like a mobile platform where you're making money off of, you know, commerce, you know, selling things like movies and software and music through, you know, your own sort of stores and that kind of thing. There is good money to be made in that. Apple and Google are showing it. Microsoft's already done a little bit of it. Do you think that they can win with that? Do you think that that's the direction that they're headed in with this? And do you think that the strategy, will change Windows by essentially turning it into more of a commerce platform, the consumer version of Windows, than a piece of software that you're selling someone?
Sure. You're correct. It's a platform play. You know, we talk a lot about this, it being free for pirates, free for everyone. But yes, what is the actual impact of that? And you say that Apple and Google both make money from this. Apple makes all its money from hardware. Google doesn't make a lot of money from, I forget what the exact figures are, but I think like Android in total, including apps and all that kind of stuff, as in their cut of app revenue is still, I think, under a billion a year. I think it's still quite small. You know, and don't forget Microsoft historically, I think Windows generates on the order of like 9 billion per quarter, I think, something insane like that. So I think, I mean, I see this as Microsoft trying to stay relevant. I see it as Microsoft trying to keep the desktop PC going for as long as possible, and it still will go for years and years and years. But I don't see Microsoft suddenly making a lot of money from this. I see it more as, let's try and keep the PC relevant. Let's try and keep Microsoft relevant while we try and develop a new market where we can actually make lots of money. And I assume that's going to be mobile. But again, whether they can actually make a big market in mobile, again, the revenues are going to be purely based on app sales, that kind of thing. I think it'll be tough. But I'm also excited to see Microsoft, you know, giving up this huge source of revenue. You know, that shows they're willing to change, they're willing to do something different, which is exciting. You know, they have been kind of stuck in the mud for a few years now.
The most shocking part of this news, of course, which everybody is zeroing in on, is the fact that they're offering this free upgrade to pirates. And of course, China is a major software pirate. I'm curious, how widespread is the pirating of Windows in China these days, not only among end users, but also among businesses and even government?
I'm not sure if they've broken out consumer versus enterprise. The latest report is 74% of all software, commercial software in China, is non-genuine. So in the interview with Reuters, Myerson said they're hoping to tackle hundreds of millions of users with this this free upgrade thing. Your guess is as good as mine. I mean, it suggests that there are, I would say, 300, 400 million users of pirated Windows in China. I don't think it could be more than that. So it's a huge percentage in China. But then I was looking at the BSA report, and I think Indonesia was 84% non-genuine software. But then I think, I don't remember the exact figures, but I think Western Europe was more, I think it was like down at 14%, around 10, 15%. So you have some idea of, developing markets are 70 to 80%, and Western Europe, US, is probably 10, 15%. So it's a huge amount of money. But then also it's not a huge amount of money if you give away Windows for free. It'll be interesting to see where this goes, for sure.
Now, can you tell us quickly about Ars Technica UK? This is a site that I believe is going up next month.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no. So Ars Technica is 17 years old. People have always asked for more content from around the world, UK, Europe, China. But we never had the reporters abroad. And now we're opening an office in London, headed by me. We're going to have some cool writers, editors covering European news. We're going to try and cover some world stuff as well. And the idea is just to make Ars Technica a more rounded site, basically. In the same way that we cover, Verizon and T-Mobile and things like that, we now want to cover stuff that's happening in Europe and the UK. Our readership is about 10% UK, which is pretty normal for like a US tech site. And, that's 10% of people that want to read lots more UK stuff. It's entirely about, the site is going to be basically identical. It's going to be arstechnica.co.uk. If you visit it today, you get a very cool picture. I suggest everyone goes and visits. And we're going to have all of the US content. And they're going to have all the UK content, just the two sites. One will be biased towards a UK reader and the other one will be biased towards a US reader. So the reader, the whole idea is basically Ars Technica readers are these amazing creatures and they're incredibly discerning. Oh, there you go. Isn't that cool? Look, that's the...
Very nice.
Yeah.
That'd make a nice tattoo, you know what I'm saying? All right, Sebastian.
We're going to get them printed on stickers and maybe put them on windows around the office.
That's a great idea. At least you have a plan. Sebastian Anthony will be readable at arstechnica.co.uk when that site goes live. And you can follow him on Twitter right now at MRSEB, Mr. Seb, on Twitter. Thank you so much for joining us today, Sebastian.
Thanks, Mike.
Thanks, Sebastian.
Thanks, Mike.
Now, there's a lot of Windows news dribbling out, including this whole pricing scenario. Now, if you want to stick around after Tech News Today, Windows Weekly, with Paul Thurrott and Mary Jo Foley and, of course, Leo, immediately follows Tech News Today. That's 11 a.m. Pacific, so you want to tune in for that for all of the Windows 10 news. All right, we've got some more news for you in just a minute, but first, let me tell you about Blue Apron. This is an awesome service, people. They will send three meals for two, basically. It's actually more than two. I always have leftovers when I do Blue Apron meals, but they'll send them to your door in a box, all the ingredients you need to make your own fresh, delicious meals, better than restaurant quality at a fraction of the price, less than $10 per person. And one of the reasons this is such a great service is that the quality of the food is so high. They're high quality seasonal ingredients from artisanal food producers, and you never get the same meal twice. That's right. Week after week after week, you're always going to be making dishes that you've never made before from Blue Apron. And some of these are really innovative, very brilliant. I love them because they make me feel like a culinary genius. I end up with these meals that I'm like, wow, I can't believe that I actually made this. It's just really, really nice stuff. The meals have about 500 to 700 calories per serving, and they take about 35 minutes on average to prepare. So if you're a busy person, you got kids, you have a busy lifestyle, you come home late sometimes, you can crank out a brilliant meal in about 35 minutes, and it's so easy to do. I personally find recipes to be very annoying to follow. They don't use recipes. They have this step-by-step process that enables you to cook everything at the same time. You just follow the step-by-step instructions, and in about 30, 35 minutes, you've got an incredible dinner, basically. I mean, it's just a wonderful, wonderful service. I highly recommend it. Blue Apron is a better way to cook, and you can check out this week's menu and get your first two meals free by going to blueapron.com/twit. That's right, two free meals just for going to blueapron.com/twit. And we certainly thank Blue Apron for their support of Tech News Today, and I thank Blue Apron for all that delicious food. Well, there are two big mergers in progress in the TV and internet space, AT&T's proposed acquisition of DirecTV and Comcast's proposed acquisition of Time Warner Cable. Regulators are currently looking at both before deciding whether or not to approve. But according to a Reuters article by Alina Selyuk and also Diane Bartz, the AT&T acquisition is meeting little resistance while the Comcast merger is coming under major scrutiny. Alina Selyuk joins us now. Welcome to you, Alina.
Thanks very much for having me for my inaugural appearance on Tech News Daily.
Yes, we're so glad to have you on. Now, why is the Comcast Time Warner cable deal getting so much attention?
The key to that is the broadband market. As we've heard from a lot of different companies in the past few months, you've got Dish, you've got Disney, you've got Verizon. Everyone is trying to get into over-the-top video. Everyone is trying to provide kind of video service, go over the cable networks. People are watching video online. I mean, we all know that people are watching Netflix and Hulu and are skipping their cable subscriptions in kind of increasing numbers every year. And so ultimately, the question becomes, which of those two mergers influences the broadband market the most? And that would be Comcast, Time Warner Cable. And while there are various concerns being offered by the critics of the merger about why this merger raises bad red flags for regulatory approval, the broadband aspect is very unique to that merger. Comcast right now is already dominating the broadband market, particularly when you start looking at speeds faster than 25 megabits per second. In that particular area, Comcast already has about half of the market. And merging with Time Warner Cable doesn't necessarily increase it by much, but it's just kind of the principle of it all that Comcast and Time Warner Cable together would offer a vast majority of true high-speed internet services across the nation. On AT&T DirecTV, that merger is a lot more about video and about just kind of your regular video offerings, pay TV offerings that compete directly with cable. It's somebody I talked to actually described it a bit kind of backwards looking versus forward looking. I mean, that's a subjective kind of a description there, but that merger, when it comes to broadband, doesn't really change very much. AT&T right now serves about 17% of that market, and DirecTV does not offer broadband at all. So that's really the key difference between those two mergers. Or if I had to pick one, that's what critics will talk about the most.
Alina, with the AT&T merger, deal with DirecTV. Is part of it the perception that DirecTV is kind of a declining asset, that it's something that, it is on its way out, at least in the U.S.? I mean, internationally, I still see it a lot. I still see dishes in use, even in big cities. But there is a perception that it is a declining asset. Would you agree with that? How are their subscription numbers looking and that kind of thing? You know, what's the real value both to AT&T and ultimately maybe for consumers, or the lack of value, if it is, for this deal, and why is it that there is a perception, at least with the deal, that maybe it actually works as opposed to the other one where it could be, you know, anti-competitive potentially?
Right. So when the deal was originally announced, in fact, a lot of the analysts, a lot of the investors raised kind of questions about how it made sense and what the point of the deal really was. What was the real value? Surprisingly, that rhetoric has changed in the past, 6 months that this deal has been percolating. AT&T has done kind of extra work reaching out to investors and explaining the, you know, the buzzword synergies of this deal. And ultimately, it comes down to being able to offer those video services that people do want. The shows are one of the issues. The sports programming is another issue. So for AT&T, that is competing for Verizon, they're looking at Verizon that has Fios and that has a lot of contracts with programmers. They do have shows. They do have that kind of service. AT&T does not. So this merger does allow AT&T to kind of step into the pay TV and the programming environment that they have traditionally not been part of and try and begin to compete with companies like Verizon, companies like Comcast. I mean, when we talk about the telecom industry, increasingly you will hear the conversation kind of get into the I guess, futuristic talk about how all of these companies are going to be competing against each other. They're all going to be offering different bundles. And in fact, bundles is another word, right, that is pretty critical here, that it would, the acquisition of DirecTV would allow AT&T to offer more kind of unique bundles that it has never been able to offer in order to, again, compete with the Comcasts and the Verizons.
So some of it is those packages and those relationships with existing content providers. It's not that they just want to put a dish on everybody's house, but now AT&T is offering their own, their own service, their own digital kind of cable service. It's not cable, it's over the, their lines, their broadband lines. So some of the value potentially for AT&T and maybe the consumers of AT&T is they'll be able to have access to all these relationships that DirecTV already has with content providers. Is that what you're saying?
That's effectively what they're pitching. And ultimately, when you read kind of the comments that they've made, their biggest pitch on this deal is that they would offer a competitive choice against Comcast, Verizon, and other traditional pay TV providers. That's their big argument, right? That they would be able to offer consumers another choice that is not a cable company.
Alina, it seems to me that despite roadblocks, both these acquisitions are going to be approved. And if they are approved, what would the pay TV market and what would the mobile, high-speed internet, not mobile, but high-speed internet market, what would these markets look like after both of these deals are approved, if they are in fact approved?
All right, so it's a bit early to kind of definitively say whether they will or will not be approved. Sources are saying that they haven't quite started talking about potential conditions. So we're still kind of months or weeks at least away from that kind of a general assumption or some kind of tea leaves to be read to draw that conclusion. But presuming that both deals go through, then we would have a market in which Comcast and Time Warner Cable together would remain the biggest pay TV provider, with AT&T at number two, which AT&T right now I think is number four in pay TV. And on broadband, you would see Comcast really secure its position as the largest broadband provider. I don't remember off the top of my head where AT&T is right now with broadband services, but it would, it would inch up. I don't know if it would surpass. I guess it doesn't really acquire any broadband services through DirecTV, since DirecTV doesn't do internet services. So I don't think that it would have an impact immediately. They do say that they hope to build out more broadband capacity after the merger and potentially expand some of the broadband offerings to the DirecTV subscribers. But we would have to see how the merger viewers handle the markets where DirecTV and AT&T do overlap, and that would make a difference. But I think, we would see Comcast, Time Warner Cable be the biggest provider on both broadband and pay TV, and AT&T would really bolster its position on pay TV.
Alina Selyuk is at Reuters.com, and you can follow her on Twitter at Alina Selyuk. Let me spell that for you. AlinaSelyuk. Thank you so much for joining us today, Alina.
Thanks very much. All right. Thank you.
Thanks, Alina.
Let us know what you think about these two deals by sending us email to tnt@twit.tv. We want to know, do you think that these deals should be approved? I'd love to hear your opinions on that. Well, Facebook updated its Messenger app to enable you to send cash. It's Facebook's first foray into mobile cash transfers. Ian Scher is executive editor at CNET, and he joins us now. Welcome to you, Ian.
Hi, how are you doing?
I'm doing great, thanks. Now, how does the new feature work exactly?
Well, it's actually very similar. If you have Snapchat, it's pretty much the same thing. You go into the Messenger app, and as you're talking to someone, you hit that dollar sign, and suddenly it says, oh, how much money would you like to send to this person? You press in the number, you press send, done. Beforehand, you have to connect up your debit card, which would be Visa or MasterCard, from your bank, and then it's all easy. It's free. They want to make it painless as possible. They say that they've already been handling about 1 million transactions a day just through the system they built back in 2007 that dealt with stuff like me paying Zynga way too much money to buy more farm stuff. And so now they're going to apply that technology to the Messenger app and basically make it so that they're able to do the same thing that Snapchat and a bunch of other people are doing.
Ian, do you think they'll take this to do cool stuff like going into retail, going into, you know, like a full mobile payment system? They have an increasingly large number of advertisers that are doing that have Facebook presence and that are advertising on Facebook and that kind of thing. It's not much of a stretch, right, to think of the fact that they could, you know, make a deal with certain coffee shops or retail, you know, large retail outlets and connect it to those folks, yeah?
Absolutely. In fact, one of the things that's important here is if you think about how the mobile payments world is shaping up, and this is one of the big things happening in the technology industry. Look at Apple Pay, Google Pay, everything. Everyone's trying to go after this stuff. And what's interesting is that you're exactly right. If they can get kind of a mass of people who have credit cards or debit cards on file, they can start applying that to all the other stuff they're trying to do, like make it easy for me to buy a shirt through their service and, you know, make it easy for me to buy more games or whatever right off of my newsfeed. So right now it's limited. It's kind of the same thing that Snapchat is doing and also kind of similar to what Venmo and PayPal have been doing for quite a while. But there's definitely the opportunity to go further if they're able to get that critical mass.
Ian, it seems like a lot of companies are getting into this space, the ability to just transfer cash to a friend, they always say. Is anybody doing this? I don't think I've ever seen anybody actually transfer cash via any of these services.
So if you open up Venmo, you can see a running list of all the people who are sending cash to one another.
Yeah.
There are people out there, clearly, but I agree with you. I haven't used it very much. I'm still kind of old fashioned, I think, in that I like to deal in, paper and handing it between people. All of us can kind of see that future somewhere in the distance where everything is digitized. The question is how we're going to get there and whether or not we're comfortable with the companies that are trying to set themselves up to be the ones who are the gatekeepers to the system. And that's really the question that's surrounding all of this. Clearly, people are going in the direction of Apple, for example, and using Apple Pay. You know, I've used Apple Pay already when I go to Walgreens or when I go to Whole Foods, but I'm not using it everywhere. And I know that whenever I use it, a lot of times people look at me and say, are you sure that that's a good idea? Like, a lot of people are still very uncomfortable with the idea of the tech industry taking over that part of their lives. So it'll be interesting to see how it all plays out.
Yeah, so Ian, you know, they're not charging. I've used Square, unlike you guys, I actually use Square Cash a good deal. So I can see the benefits in doing it. But Facebook's not charging a transaction fee or anything. And that's the appeal of using things like Square Cash and other things. So right. What's in it for Facebook? How are they going to monetize this? Or how is this going to enhance their platform? How are they going to, you know, use this as a way to, you know, make to create more value not only for their users, but also for, you know, them as a company, since they are, you know, a public company that now has to, you know, report to shareholders.
And to their shareholders. Yeah, no, there are two answers to that. One is what I brought up before, this idea of getting a critical mass of cards on file that they can then apply to something else. But it's also worth noting that the Messenger world is becoming very hot. I mean, they spent $20 billion on WhatsApp, right? I mean, this is a very hot space. And one of the things that's happened with a lot of the Messenger apps, I bring up Snapchat again, is that they are all including these features in for free. And so for Facebook, they're in an odd position of actually just playing a little bit of catch up. And where they're going to go with this is still unclear. But right now, they need to make sure that they're not missing a key critical feature that then draws people away from their platform, because that would be the worst thing. If you think about it, if you look at the data, they've got something like 1.2 billion people per day accessing Facebook on a mobile phone, but only about 500 million people are using Facebook Messenger. So they've got a, you know, less than half of people are using this app, and they want to increase that number. So that's part of the challenge they've got. And then what are they going to do with it afterward? We don't know. But they've got to kind of fight these two fronts. There's the future of how we do payments. There's the competition angle, and see how it all kind of works out for them.
Ian Scher is at CNET.com, and you can follow him on Twitter at Ian Scher with two R's at the end. Thank you so much for joining us, Ian.
My pleasure.
Good to see you, Ian.
Paris police raided Uber's offices as part of an investigation into the company's UberPop service. Some 25 cops grabbed emails, documents, and smartphones used by Uber drivers. French authorities say a new law that went into effect January 1st makes UberPop illegal because it requires all chauffeurs to be licensed and insured. And in related news that broke just before we went on the air here today, a German regional court issued a nationwide ban on Uber. The ban extends to both Uber and UberPop, and each violation warrants a fine that exceeds $250,000. Uber says they plan to appeal. Jason Heiner, this is just part of the ongoing war between Uber and governments all around the world who basically say that Uber is cheating. They're not following they're basically a taxi service, but they're not following the rules. What's your take on where Uber's going with all this? Are they going to be able to succeed, for example, in their appeal of the German case? And do you think they're going to come out triumphant in the French case? I mean, it seems like a lot of opposition for Uber.
Yeah. Boy, you know, they're a company that kind of breaks the model, right? That sort of, and because of that, they've had certain advantages. They get sort of certain, I think, cost advantages clearly by not sort of having to follow traditional regulations and that kind of things. Also speed advantages in terms of innovating. I think the thing is that people want Uber. Users and the public, it is an easier way to get transportation. And so ultimately, I think that Uber will prevail, or a competitor to Uber who maybe does a better job. It's an opportunity certainly for Lyft and other companies that can maybe play better with governments to sweep in and potentially have a place in those markets where Uber doesn't. And Uber has kind of gone in and sort of been rogue and done it the way that they've done it, and in some cases created some enemies, I think, among government and among regulators and that kind of thing. So, but clearly the public wants this kind of service. It is easier, it is more convenient, and there are just better benefits to it. And so I think it'll happen, but whether it's Uber or not is still kind of an open question. And I think it will probably take some time for those places where it is banned to make it happen. But in Europe, I mean, I was in Europe last week, both in France and in UK, Uber was super popular. And obviously in the US, it's spreading like wildfire. So the service, the idea, and the concept is clearly a winner, and I think it's just a matter of time and some growing pains and all of that good stuff.
And hopefully it'll put pressure on the regular taxi and chauffeur industry to innovate in the same direction.
Yeah, exactly.
So in product update news, we have more Microsoft news. Microsoft technology will handle over-the-air software updates for Ford cars in the future, according to a Ford spokesperson. Microsoft will create a custom Ford cloud network to zap improvements, bug fixes, and new content to Ford dashboard computers. The new system first hits the market this year with Ford's Sync 3 multimedia system. Uber updated its API and now allows third-party app developers to embed Uber inside their apps. Another interesting development in the world of Uber. And the live streaming site Ustream also opened its API, which enables anyone to build what is essentially a Meerkat clone. Access to the API is free as long as developers allow Ustream's ads to play in the app. This is yet another movement, Jason Heiner, in the world of live streaming. Of course, Ustream has been around for a while, but I think with Meerkat, I think we're on this sort of tipping point where live streaming from a mobile device is essentially becoming mainstream.
Yeah, it's funny how this idea it's kind of been around, but all of a sudden, you know, the cameras are powerful enough. The broadband networks have enough capacity, and the devices are powerful enough to handle it. And all of a sudden, it's like this is the time. Is 2015 is the time when, you know, mobile streaming video is suddenly, you know, a thing, even though people have been working on this for years. But I think it's really a matter of capacity and you know, resources, and now all of a sudden these devices have the resources they need to be powerful, you know, streaming machines. And it's pretty cool, and there's lots of weird stuff that people are doing, but there's lots of awesome stuff too.
Yeah, absolutely. I'm looking forward to a world in which lots of people are live streaming for lots of reasons and innovating in that space. And we're already seeing it, I think, with Meerkat. Well, we've got more news coming up for you in just a sec. But first, let me tell you about Gazelle. You know, for a long time, I've been telling everybody about Gazelle as a place where you can sell your used device. It's just a perfect idea. You got something sitting around. You don't want to meet somebody in a parking lot, some stranger in a parking lot to sell them your old device. And you don't really want to recycle a device that is functional. What you want to do is sell it to Gazelle. But for a long time, people used to ask me, well, they buy these devices. Where can I buy the devices that they buy? And now it's a fairly recent feature, and that's that Gazelle will sell you used devices as well. And they are a very trustworthy place to buy a device because they have both certified like new devices and certified good. Certified like new means that it's just like a brand new device. And of course, all of their phones and tablets have been put through a rigorous 30-point inspection to ensure that they're fully functional. And certified pre-owned devices are backed by a 30-day risk-free return policy. That's right. You don't risk anything when you buy a phone or a tablet from Gazelle, because if for whatever reason, after 2, 3, 4 weeks, you can just send it back and they'll give you a full refund. So again, zero risk. And as always, Gazelle is the place to sell your used gadgets. You get paid in cash, payment is fast, and you get that payment within a few days of your item being received. What's your iPhone worth? Take a minute and go to gazelle.com to find out. We thank Gazelle for their support of Tech News Today. Tencent Holdings, the biggest social network and online entertainment company in China, missed forecasts by reporting its slowest revenue growth in 7 years for Q4 2014. That's the bad news. The good news is that disappointing revenue growth was actually 24% increase, and profits rose 51%, totaling nearly $1 billion. Not bad for a disappointing quarter. This is an example of the rapid growth of companies like this, Jason Heiner, in China. And, you know, yeah, they don't have a lot of, you know, Tencent Holdings doesn't have a big amount of mind share in the United States and in Europe and elsewhere. But within China, of course, they're a giant, and they're doing pretty good for themselves there.
Yeah, those are numbers. Those are disappointing numbers that a lot of companies would gladly trade successful numbers for that kind of growth. But, you know, it's still a rocket ship. There's still so much growth potential coming and in process there. And, you know, with it joining the digital revolution in such big ways. And so, yeah, these kind of numbers are likely to hold for the foreseeable future as China, you know, digitizes. And it's exciting. There's a lot more people in the world joining the digital revolution, and that's ultimately a good thing.
Yeah, definitely. And if you're wondering where all that money comes from, Tencent owns, among other things, WeChat, which has 500 million active monthly users, and they're way more innovative than, say, Facebook Messenger with the payments and all the rest. And about half their revenues come from online gaming. So that's really where the money is coming from, online gaming and messaging through WeChat. They have a whole bunch. They have their fingers in all kinds of cookie jars, but those are the main sources of revenue. Well, in hack attack news, the health insurance, you got to sit down for this one, folks. The health insurance company Primera Blue Cross said yesterday that it got hacked. Now, the breach may have exposed the medical data and personal financial information of about 11 million customers. That data includes clinical information, which appears to be details about medical conditions and all the stuff that people discuss with their doctors, and also bank account numbers, social security numbers, and other data. Now, here's another weird part of the story. Primera's biggest corporate clients include Microsoft and Starbucks. And Starbucks itself has actually come out with a statement saying, yes, we believe that the personal information and medical information of our employees was probably compromised and is probably out there in the wild. When is this going to end, Jason Heiner? This is yet another big hack of a major insurance company that's affecting lots and lots of people. This one is better in the sense that it's a smaller number of people that have been compromised, but worse in the sense that the type of information that's been stolen includes medical information.
Yeah, I think it's just, you know, we've known for years that there were vulnerabilities, that there were insecurities, that there were poor security policies in place at lots of big companies, and that you know, many of them have underinvested in IT. They've, you know, chosen bad technologies. They've let old technologies hang around too long. And, you know, for years we've known that this is these are best practices not being followed. And it was often, I think, kind of sloughed off and not taken very seriously. And a lot of that is sort of chickens coming home to roost. And with all of these companies, you know, that have used, that have not done best practices or been sloppy or not invested enough in their information security. And so, you know, the chain reaction is still kind of happening, but it is definitely leading a lot more companies to invest what they need to in order to get their security up to snuff. But it takes time. It takes years. And a lot of them are still in process of cleaning up their information security. And it's hard to stay ahead of as well, right? We're in an environment, still in a technology environment that is changing so rapidly and adapting so rapidly. And it's hard to keep up, especially the bigger your company is, the harder it is to, you know, to turn the ship, right? To turn those big ships. And so the bigger you are, in some cases, the more vulnerable you are, even though you have more resources to tackle these things. And so, yeah, there's no sign of this abating yet while, you know, the rest of sort of the corporate world tries to clean itself up and you know, have better information security.
That is absolutely true. Well, we've got some big numbers for you. 1,228. That's how many Android apps are still vulnerable to the freak bug, according to network security company FireEye. Now, that those apps collectively have been downloaded billions and billions of times. Okay, another big number for you, 190. That's how many countries Windows 10 will launch in this summer, according to Microsoft. And one more big Microsoft number, 111. That's how many languages Windows 10 will launch in. I think this is pretty impressive. It's a little side note for the Windows news, Jason Heiner, but yeah, the fact that they're launching in 190 countries and 111 languages simultaneously is impressive. Usually companies, you know, will launch initially in a couple dozen countries and languages, but this is a huge rollout.
It's impressive. I mean, it gets to what we were talking about earlier. Like, this Windows 10 is their platform play.
Yeah.
Like, they want, you know, services run on top of them. And kind of as we talked about, you know, they are trading software dollars for, you know, potentially platform pennies. But it's still, in order for a platform like to succeed, you have to have a lot of users on it, and you have to have, you know, it be ubiquitous. And that's what they're going for. And this is another sign that they're, you know, really trying to take advantage of the platform-ness of Windows and Windows 10 in a big way. And, you know, this is the way to do it. This is the way that you win with a strategy like that, is you get it out, you get it in the hands of as many people as possible, and then you try to make money on the services that run on top.
Yep. It's a new Microsoft, and I'm optimistic. They seem to be so far saying all the right things and doing all the right things with Windows 10. I think this is going to be, you know, they kind of go back and forth, winner, loser with each release of Windows. And I think this is going to be a winner. Well, in news you can lose, we've reported in the past on Google delivery drone projects, which have been tested extensively in Australia. Now, Google X Lab chief Astro Teller says the design is being scrapped and the company is starting over. Called Project Wing, the drone delivery system involved a drone with a 5-foot single wing that took off and landed vertically. The drone design, however, proved too hard to control. Now Google's focusing on an alternative design that doesn't use the single wing approach. This is a pretty off the, you know, sort of out of the box thinking for drones. Unlike all the other drone delivery systems, Jason Heiner, this one sort of like takes off like a rocket and then flies like an airplane and then comes back and lands kind of like on its back. And everything about this was great, except in Australia's high winds, they found that it was almost impossible to control, and it had difficulty dealing with the cargo aspects of it as well. So they're going back to the drawing board. But it's crazy to me that a company like Google would be designing its own little airplane.
Yeah.
It's got to be somebody else who specializes in airplanes that they could use.
Yeah, I know they're doing so many interesting things. The one thing Google is never a loss for interesting things that they're doing. Yeah. And we mock them for some of the crazy stuff that they do, and it's easy to do that. But at the same time, they are out there trying things and funding things and funding crazy ideas. And we need people funding crazy ideas. And and I like that, they have that other drone project that's involved with the balloons and the broadband project and that kind of thing as well. So they dig the drones over at Google right now. They're doing lots of interesting experiments with the drones.
They are, and you're referring to there are two types of drone projects at Google. One is for delivering packages, which case they're in direct competition with Amazon and other companies, DHL in Germany. And the other one is for delivering internet connectivity through a kind of mesh networking system in the sky, if you will. And these are solar-powered drones that can stay aloft for years, and that's another super exciting moonshot. I love all this stuff as well. I think it's just really, really fascinating that a company like Google will take advertising dollars essentially for search queries and turn it into internet in the sky type of projects. I think it's just fascinating if you really think about it. Well, our TNT fan of the day is Tink Patience. I don't think that's her real name, who posted this picture on Instagram of her watching Tech News Today on the twit.tv website while knitting something.
Nice.
I'm hoping that she's knitting a cozy for my MacBook Pro with Retina. So probably not. She's probably something else, probably something more practical. Well, how do you watch or listen to TNT? Just record a video or take a picture of yourself or your setup and post it on Google+, Twitter, or Facebook and use the hashtag #HowIWatchTNT and we will find it. Jason Heiner, you are the global editor-in-chief of Tech Republic and the global long-form editor of ZDNet here at CBS Interactive. Tell us, would you please, about your book, Follow the Geeks.
Ah, yeah, sure. So Follow the Geeks is a book that I've been working on with co-author Lindsay Gilpin since the middle of last year. And we just announced this week the person who's going to be featured in chapter 3. It's Gina Trapani.
Oh, wow.
Yes. And so that was just announced yesterday, as a matter of fact. So we are very excited. We are serial publishing. So as we complete these chapters, we...
Okay. Somebody should write a book about Skype because it doesn't always work.
Online for a limited period of time.
I'm sorry, Jason. We had a Skype hiccup there. So, go ahead. Continue. I think we're back.
No worries. Okay, sorry. So, we're releasing the chapters serially. So we release them one at a time. We release them on the web, on our website, followthegeeksbook.com. So people can read them as we complete them. And then they're available for a limited time. And then when the next chapter comes, we release that one and we take, the previous one down. So the current chapter, chapter 2, is on Lisa Betney, and that one will be available until the end of the day today, actually. And then the next chapter on Gina Trapani will be available for free starting on Friday. We're choosing digital entrepreneurs who are have done innovative things in the way that they've figured out kind of the future of work. That's really the theme of the book, is the future of the work and the people who've kind of figured something out by going out on their own or doing interesting things. And so we're doing the book in kind of an interesting way to try to, use the power of community as well. So when we release these chapters, we also ask feedback from our readers, and the best insights and the best feedback that we get from our readers will be included in the final version of the book, which will be available, which will be published in the second half of this year. And pre-orders are also available for the full book on the site, which will be published in audiobook, ebook, and as well as paperback and hardback.
Wonderful. I love that strategy for publishing a book. And of course, Gina Trapani is a longtime host here and also guest occasionally here on the Twit Network. She is the co-founder of ThinkUp. She is the creator of todo.text and a whole bunch of other things. She is a real innovator, and we love her. And so I can't wait to read chapter 3 and also the whole book. So Jason Heiner, I want to thank you so much for coming on today and co-anchoring with us.
Always glad to be here. Always glad to be here. Thanks, Mike.
All right. Thanks again. We'll see you next time. Bye-bye. You can subscribe to Tech News Today from your podcast app. Do it right now. If you're not subscribed, you got to subscribe. It's just so convenient. You can choose any other way to subscribe at twit.tv/TNT. You can also watch us live every weekday at 10 a.m. Pacific, 1 p.m. Eastern, 1800 UTC at live.twit.tv or on the app or browser plugin of your choice, which you can find at twit.tv/apps. If you're ever in Northern California, come on in and watch us live. You can also follow us on Twitter at Tech News Today TV. You can follow me on Google Plus. Just go to Elgin.com and that will redirect you to my Google Plus page. Let us know what you think. Send us an email to TNT at twit.tv or call 260-TNT-SHOW. Don't miss Tech News Tonight at 4 p.m. Pacific every weeknight. And that, ladies and gentlemen, is the Tech News Today. My name's Mike Elgin. Thank you for tuning in. We'll see you tomorrow.